We have been studying church history, and we've been looking at all the way back to the time of Isaiah when he made prophecies about the kingdom in Isaiah 2, and Joel 2, prophecies about the coming of the church, and others like that. I may not be able to focus this morning. But there are so many prophecies in the Old Testament telling about the coming of the church, the kingdom. And then, of course, we come to the first century, and we read about John the Baptist, and, of course, we read about Jesus prophesying about the coming of the kingdom. And like in Matthew 16, he said nothing was going to keep it from coming, occurring. And then we saw the establishment of it in Acts chapter 2. Then we saw how it grew. But then we saw some problems that it started to have. Paul said in Acts chapter 20 that even amongst the elders, there would be ones who would arise, who would lead some astray. And so we have followed that from the first century. We followed how different religious groups were started, and how they, you might say, went away from the New Testament teachings. We talked about the Roman Catholic Church and the Dark Ages, and then we talked about the Protestant Reformation with people like Martin Luther and then later John Calvin, and talked about their influence. And then we started talking about, in the past couple of weeks, about those who saw that reforming wasn't sufficient. We needed to go back to the first century. We needed to go back to the Bible and have nothing else as a religious authority. And so we looked at people last week, many of them from Scotland, like the Haldane brothers, Sandeman, John Glass, and others who went back to the New Testament. In many cases, you know, they didn't go as far back as we would have liked them to, but they started the process. And then we started looking at those who came to the United States and started doing the same. And I've been mentioning this book that I've been reading, and Sally Ann's starting to read it now, called Arkansas Angels, and I just about finished it last night. And it has so much history of the Lord's church, especially in Arkansas and Missouri, and then somewhat in Texas, as I'll talk a little bit today, but mainly Arkansas and Missouri. And I was reading last night to her. She can't read herself, so I read to her, and reading parts of it about how different ones in Arkansas had came and started churches in Missouri. And some of those churches in Missouri, Denise and I had either worshipped at or visited, or I'd had a chance to preach at, and it was really, really fascinating to learn about how they were started and who helped start them, and you know, some of the issues that they faced. So we're going to look at some of that today, and what we're seeing is, you know, some have called people in the Church of Christ Campbellites because they think Alexander Campbell started it. But like we saw last week and we're seeing today, people we're talking about planted the seeds throughout the eastern half of the United States, most of them had never even heard of Alexander Campbell or Barton Stone. All they did was go back to the Bible and see what the church was in the Bible. And so they gave up Methodist doctrine, Baptist doctrine, whatever, to start the New Testament church. The first one I want to mention was a guy by the last name of Lynn. Probably never heard of him. But he had a lot to do with some of the churches that started in Kentucky and other places. He was born in Bardstown, Kentucky. Denise and I lived in that part of the world for a while. We visited Bardstown. And that part of Kentucky is very much an alcohol area. You know, that's where they make a lot of whiskey and different type of liquors in that part. and it was known for that. But when he went there, that was before, really, it got that name. Well, Indians were still in that area to a great extent, all right? This was late 1700s. So many Indians were still in that part of Kentucky. And he was studying his Bible. That's it, just studying his Bible. Well, another person who was with him at the time, knew each other, was George Clark. Well, we've studied Lewis and Clark before. Well, that was Clark's brother. So Clark's brother had a lot to do with the church and gospel preaching and so forth. And so they were friends. And I don't know much about the Clark man himself. All right. I couldn't find a lot about him, but I found a lot about Lynn. And so they had a lot to do with the Indians. Well, what happened, Lynn, after the Indian wars were kind of over in that area, went to Bardstown, and he would not preach Baptist doctrine. He would only preach what the Bible taught. Well, the local Baptists didn't like it, so he ended up pulling away from them. Now, he had heard somewhere along the line about this man named Stone and that he was preaching some of the same things that he did. And so he traveled 80 miles. Now remember, this was, 1800. Traveled 80 miles so he could talk to Barton Stone, and Barton Stone ended up baptizing him. And what happened after that was even more interesting. He moved to North Alabama. And if you've ever been to Alabama, especially North Alabama, there are churches of Christ everywhere in that area. Well, I'm going to talk about two of the first churches that were started in Alabama. So he moved in 1810 to North Alabama. He had two daughters. Both of them were married. So the four of them all moved to Alabama. And he started preaching in Huntsville, which is in North Alabama. And as far as the records could find, he was the first located preacher. In other words, he didn't go all different places. He stayed in one place and preached. And then in 1814, he organized the church in Huntsville. So that's been there over 200 years in Huntsville. Well, then one of his daughters and her husband moved to Florence, which is still in that part of Alabama. And there wasn't a church there, so they began studying in their home, studied with their neighbors. And then a church was started there in 1824, and it still meets. Still meets. It's called the Stony Point Church of Christ. And it has continued to meet. It's never stopped meeting since 1824. That's just outside Florence. The other daughter and her husband moved to Waterloo, Alabama. And this is really fascinating. Moved to Waterloo, Alabama. And the church there was started in 1826. And things went well until 1835, and the church disappeared. I mean, just absolutely disappeared. And no one knew anything about what happened to it until recently. This is very recent. And Texas Christian University, which we'll talk about in a little bit, it started out as a school associated with the Churches of Christ. It's now a Disciples of Christ school, but because of the Instrument and Missionary Society. But it started out associated with the Churches of Christ. Well, they have a big religious library there. Well, a letter was found in the library not all that many years ago, and it was a letter by Dr. Mansell Matthews, who was part of the church in Waterloo. And so in that letter, he explains what happened to the Waterloo church. What happened was the whole church in Waterloo decided to leave and moved to Texas and start a church there. Now, what's interesting is, of course, remember, this is, early 1800s, So it was wild, so they hired a guide to take them there. And he was fairly famous. His name was Davy Crockett. So Davy Crockett took the Waterloo Church, all those people, to Texas. Well, he didn't like taking them because every Sunday they would stop and worship and not move on. So they would worship all day long on Sunday, and he just didn't like that at all. There was just too much downtime for him. So he left them at Memphis. That's where he left. And he went on to Texas to a place called San Antonio, where, of course, he was killed at the Battle of the Alamo. So I'm assuming that's why he was killed at the Battle of the Alamo, because he left them in Memphis. But anyway, that's what happened. And they started the church in Clarksville, Texas. And that was in 1836. And as far as anyone knows, that was the first church in Texas, nearly 200 years ago. other things from the Lynn family. See, this all goes back to one guy, one man, Lynn. This was his last name. And the things that grew from him, and there's a lot more coming from him. And of course, at this time, he's already passed away, but his kids, his two daughters and their husbands, are carrying on so many different things. Well, the ones in Waterloo that I mentioned that moved to Texas had two children that became very famous as far as the Lord's church. one of the daughters had a daughter named Hetty who married Joseph Addison Clark. And Joseph Addison Clark had two sons, Addison and Randolph, and both grew up to be gospel preachers. Well, the Clark brothers established a Christian college called Adran. I guess it was after their name, near Thorpe Spring, Texas. And that today is what's Texas Christian University. Started out as Adran College by those two gospel preachers. Well, this is what happened at the church. It's a fairly well-known, and you may have heard this before. At the Thorpe Springs Church of Christ, discussion was started about whether we should have mechanical instruments of music in worship. Well, the two younger brothers were for it, but the father was against it. They probably didn't have good Easter meals with that. But the father told the sons that if you brought in the instrument, it would split the church. Because three-fourths of the congregation had signed a petition saying, no, we shouldn't have the instrument. Well, they were getting ready to have a gospel meeting, and the guy that they had got to come in to have the gospel meeting liked the instrument. I don't even have his name. And the father told the sons, You don't need to do this. This is going to cause a problem. And over 100 people signed it saying they didn't want it in the church. But the students at the college wanted it. And so they brought a piano in. And during the service, the father and his wife and about two-thirds of the congregation walked out. And so there was a third of the congregation left there. And after their leaving, it was reported that one of the sons, Addison, said, "Play on, Miss Bertha." And you may have heard that expression before. A lot of things like that happened. A lot of places where people wanted the instrument. And it tore apart churches. Some other places. In New York, believe it or not, in 1818, here's another area that was starting to go back to the Bible. They sent out a message basically telling people that they were calling themselves a Church of Christ. And that was in New York. And they were calling people to go back to the Bible and simply be New Testament Christians. Don't be anything else. And it seemed like there were there were these movements starting all over the United States, and most of them didn't know anything about the others. Like the ones in one state didn't know anything about the others. Not like today when everything is instantaneous. But back then they didn't know. So people were simply going back, starting with this, nothing else, no denominational doctrines at all. And they were simply going back to this and seeing what is the Church of the New Testament. You know, what is it? How was it started? Who started it? What does it mean to be a member? How do you become a member? How did those people worship? And so on. And that's what they were doing. And like I said, it was happening all over. Like we mentioned the past week or two, it was happening all over Great Britain and Ireland and Scotland. There were some that were in Georgia. This is another interesting account. Some farmers from North Carolina had moved into Georgia, and they had been influenced by James O'Kelly. We talked about him last week. He was another one of these people trying to restore the church. And so they had been influenced by him, and so they started meeting. That was in 1807. By 1822, they had been influenced somewhat by Barton Stone. Some people in the community were calling them O'Kellyites and Stoneites. And then Nathan Smith moved into the area in 1832. He had been influenced by Alexander Campbell. And they built a new meeting house there in a place called Antioch. And there they decided to give up their denominational name, so they were, ironically, first called Christians at Antioch, just like the people in the first century. And there are many, many more of these movements that were taking place. There were some in Atlanta, just all over. there was... In 1805 or 1806, south of McMinnville, Tennessee, a group came together with a desire to worship, and they united on the Bible alone. And then 2 years later, some of the members moved to North Alabama to Bridgeport, and the church there still meets. And again, that was over 200 years ago. So you can go to North Alabama and worship in a church that's been there for over 200 years. And most of these, like I said, had never even heard of Alexander Campbell or Barton Stone. They didn't know anything about them. And just like I mentioned about this book, Arkansas Angels, it talks about so many people that moved from Tennessee and Kentucky, especially, into Arkansas. And many churches there were started years and years before the Civil War. When we lived in Arkansas, Denise and I visited a lot of those churches because there's still churches there. We read about the beginning of the church in Paragould. Well, we live just a few miles south of Paragould. That's where Crowley's Ridge College is today. And I learned about where Crowley's Ridge started and who Crowley was and why it was started. And all of these things were just amazing. One of the, I don't remember if it was the one in Paragould or not, but one of the ones in northeast Arkansas, they started... There was no church in the city. Now, it was Jonesboro. That's where it was, where we lived. And I think it was just two men moved there. There was no church there at all. No Church of Christ at all. So they started started preaching on the streets. That's how they started. Started preaching on the streets. And then they started, they rented a room in the Masonic Lodge, I think. So the Masons were already there. Rented a room in the Masonic Lodge. And then they rented a place, another place in town. And then they were finally able to build a place And that church today is the Fisher Street Church of Christ, which still meets. And I knew people when we lived there from the Fisher Street Church. So that church is, you know, 150 years old or 175 there in Jonesboro. But there were so many others. And it is, Sally and I were just talking about this, how it builds you up in the sense, look at how hard, and look at the discipline the people had, how much work and time they put in. Many would, one of the preachers I was reading about was the walking preacher. He didn't even ride a horse. And he would walk to places to either hold meetings or try and get the church started. And it's just really builds you up. And of course, at that time, of course, it was a very poor part too. They rarely got paid anything at all. And if they did get paid something, it might be a dollar or two. They would leave home and maybe be gone for weeks or months at a time before they came back, because they were trying to start the church and in all these different places. And in a lot of places they would go in and there would be denominational churches there, and they would start preaching. Of course, debating was very important. And in a lot of places the Lord's church started it and all the denominational churches shut down. They didn't even meet anymore. And it was only the Church of Christ. So it is, like I said, it is extremely faith-building. And some of the things they went through, it almost brings tears to your eyes of all the things they did and suffered through. Many of them were threatened. One of them was, he had went... He was holding a meeting, and he had went to this house, and then the man and his family there went to the Church of Christ in town, but the father didn't, this man's father, the man's house, his father lived with them, but he wasn't a member of the church. And he didn't like the Church of Christ. I don't think he necessarily went anywhere, he just didn't like the Church of Christ. So the son had to go out into the field for a while and work. So the preacher was in the house. And the father came down. He lived in the upstairs. Came down and got a shotgun and shot him right in the head and killed him, because he didn't like him. And there was just a lot of persecution back then. Just a lot of persecution. It's really, I love restoration history. I just love church history, period. But especially restoration history. And then, Lord willing, next week we'll get into more. You know, we've heard so much about Alexander Campbell and Barton Stone. We'll talk some about them next week. And, especially Alexander Campbell, him and his father Thomas came from the British Isles to the United States. And they had a big effect, especially in starting colleges. So that we'll talk more about that next week. So thanks for being here. Appreciate it very much.